Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at RitaSchulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Georgia Schaefer is no stranger to heartache. Diagnosed with breast cancer in her 30s, she was given a 2% chance to live beyond 10 years. She went through radiation, chemo, a bone marrow transplant, a divorce, lost her job, and in the words of her son, she was a ghost in a shell. Georgia not only survived, she went on to become an author, professional speaker, Christian life coach, and a licensed psychologist. She's a regular columnist for Christian Coaching Today and a board member of the International Christian Coaches Association. She's here today to talk about her book, Taking Out Your Emotional Trash. Georgia's story and photos are featured in the film Letters to God, and she's part of the Women of Extraordinary Faith DVD. Georgia, welcome to Heartline.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What do you mean by the term emotional trash?
Well, when I talk about emotional trash, I'm talking about all those negative thoughts and feelings and attitudes that if we don't deal with, they just accumulate in our hearts and minds. And then they lead to these strong emotional reactions where we say or do something we regret. And so I'm not saying our emotions are unhealthy or dangerous. What I am saying is that the emotional trash is the things we ignore or deny, and that eventually creates problems in our relationships.
Mm. You have a miraculous but extremely difficult story. Can you share a bit about it and what kind of emotional trash it created for you?
Yeah. Years ago, when I was in my 30s, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, had a mastectomy, and then 6 months later, the cancer returned. And because of my age and the aggressiveness of the cancer, I was given a 2% chance to be alive in 10 years, 2%.
Mm-hmm.
My son was 8, so that meant I had a 2% chance to see him graduate from high school. And so I did what I could do for long-term survival. They suggested aggressive chemotherapy, radiation, and a bone marrow transplant. And I don't know if you know anything about a bone marrow transplant, but they're extremely aggressive. And the doctor said, you know, there's a fine line between killing the cancer, and they take you right up to that fine line. It did just about kill me.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
when all those treatments were finished, I was in remission. But as my son said a number of years ago, he said, Mom, you were a ghost in a shell during that time. He would be afraid to even go on a different floor of the house if he wanted to play with his games. He would give me a frying pan and a wooden spoon, and he'd say, Mom, I'm going downstairs. If you need me, hit this, because that's how weak I was. And so that wasn't bad enough, which it was. My husband and I at the time were separated. I went through a divorce.
Yeah.
And then because I was so extremely weak, they held my job for 2 years, but then I couldn't go back to work. So there I was, single mom, fighting for my life without any job. And so it was a very, very difficult time. And you're right, I accumulated a lot of anger, had a lot of unresolved anger, a lot of sadness,
a lot of
frustration.
Loss.
Yeah, a lot of
huge
loss.
Huge amounts of loss.
Yeah.
So when you were going through all that, your husband wasn't going through the cancer, the chemo, and all that with you?
Well, he's not totally to blame. Neither of us were Christians at the time, and both of us were pretty much into worldly things like success and money and things like that. So we both had our values on the wrong page. So I don't necessarily blame him for everything, because I had my part in it.
How did you deal with the emotional trash? What first steps did you take? I mean, there was so much there for you, like... Was the anger first, the sadness?
Yeah, I thought the sadness was going to destroy me. I mean, the pain was so intense. It was crippling. And I thought the anger that I felt was, I was, you know, going to destroy everybody else because I was just furious at where life had placed me. And it was a process to work through all those feelings little by little. I tell people we can only handle the pain a little bit at a time. We're like a shaken up bottle of soda. And if I shake up a bottle of soda before I open it, you know, you have all that pressure inside. And that's pretty much what I was like. I had all this emotional stuff just build up. And if I was to open a bottle of soda, I'd like twist the lid, you know, ever so slightly, leave a little bit of the pressure off. So the way I dealt with my emotions was a little bit at a time. And then, you know, and it didn't always work out perfectly. Some days, you know, I would just lay in bed, stare at the wall, stare at the ceilings. But I tried to purposely have times where I did something that gave me a sense of relief, something that distracted me. For me, it's God's creation.
Were you a Christian during this time? Did you become a Christian?
Yeah. What happened is during the transplant, I did just about die. I had a fever of 104. And it was during that time that I experienced Jesus in a real way.
Wow.
I just felt like that footprints in the sand we often hear about Jesus carrying us. Just had this image in my mind of him carrying me. And I just said to him, put me down. You know, there's people more important than me. And he just seemed to be saying, no, you need me. I'm here. And it was really a peace and a comfort and a love that was palpable. I don't think to this day, and that was 25 years ago, that I've ever felt such a profound sense of peace, comfort, and love. And so that really changed my life, but I still didn't commit to having that daily relationship. And then it was about a year later, I was telling a woman named Marilyn Hevlin my story, and she said, it sounds like Jesus was there for you in the tough times. She said, tell me about your daily relationship.
Wow.
And that question really, I knew I didn't have one, but yet I had experienced him. He was no longer somebody in the sky people talked about. And so that's when I really made the commitment.
Mm. How do you think accumulating emotional trash affects people over time? What happens to our hearts?
Oh, they get hard. And so even if somebody does do something loving and caring or reaches out to us, it's like, you know, we have this wall build up, or I'm a gardener, and well, if we go through any time of drought, the soil just gets really hard. And even if I try to water the plants, if the it's going on for any length of time, the drought, the soil doesn't even absorb the water, which is the very thing it needs. It's so hard, the water just runs off. And so all of these things just pile up and they just harden like cement. And then we not only don't feel the pain of life, but we don't get to experience the joy either.
So what are some signs that this trash is building up in our hearts? What should we be looking for? Because sometimes we're in denial, obviously, you know, and other times, you know, we're hardened, but are there some signs you think that people can look for?
Well, one of the biggest things is because like physical trash, these things do accumulate. And just like we take our physical trash out each week, if we don't, it stinks. If we're not doing something intentionally to deal with these little petty grudges or the deep resentments, it's pretty much a guarantee that we have it and we're going to act it out in some way. A lot of times people resist it. They think they don't have the time to deal with it. They don't, you know, they think it's focusing on the negative. They think if they're going to ignore their anger, it's just going to disappear. And the problem is, if you don't face your feelings, it usually means at some future point, you're going to find yourself doing nothing but dealing with it. It might be 4 years from now, but you're going to find yourself at a point you can't do anything but deal with the hurt and pain because you're just at that point. And so, you know, ask yourself, how am I doing in my relationships with others? Does everybody always seem to be mad at me? Could it be I'm projecting, you know, anger? Do I tend to react to everything or do I respond to to different situations. Am I protecting myself? Am I getting enough sleep, rest? Because that affects the way we handle our emotions.
Sure. And, you know, am I sarcastic? Am I cutting? What are other people saying to me about how I'm coming across?
Yeah. A lot of times we don't identify that as even having anger, that sarcasm. Mm-hmm. But that's a face of anger.
Absolutely, it is. You say we have to discover what will motivate us to pay attention to how our behavior is affecting other people. And that's really key because, like we said, I think some people walk around with a low-grade awareness of how their trash is affecting those around them. And so even if we're not exploding at other people, we may be doing these other things, and that's just as painful for other people, isn't it?
Yeah, it just undermines our relationship.
Absolutely.
And so what is the motivation that you have to deal with it? Because it does take work, and if you haven't dealt with it for a while, it can be overwhelming. But why do you want to do it? Do you want healthier relationships, those of us who are grandparents? Do we want to model the skills for our children and grandchildren of what it looks like to handle our anger in a constructive way, what it looks like to live a life without all this bitterness and resentment leaking out on everybody, dumping our trash on other people?
Mm-hmm.
So why is that important for you to do it? Because once you identify your motivation and you envision, what's my life going to be look like if I'm not walking around with all this unforgiveness? How's my life going to be different? Well, I'm going to feel free. I'm going to be more present in the situation. I'm going to be open to all the emotions. Life's going to be richer relationally. So we got to get that in our mind so that we're willing then to do the work.
Absolutely. If we don't find the motivational piece, I mean, I work with a lot of eating disorder clients, and I think if they can't find the motivator, they're going to continue to stay stuck. Because that's what centers you. That's what gives you that push. And you're right, we're more free. And if we're not doing it for anything else but for ourselves and the legacy that we're going to leave, what do we want, like, you know, people to say about us and the life we've led? So that's really important. You also write about how easily wants can get distorted into needs. Help us unpack that a bit. How are needs different than wants or expectations?
Well, needs, I refer to needs as the basic essentials for life, mm-hmm. water, air, oxygen, and those things we need to live. But wants are the things, and they're not necessarily bad, the things we desire, the things we would like to have or happen. And what happens is sometimes we have good desires, like I desire my husband to help me with the children this weekend, or I desire my friend to go along with me to a ball game. There's nothing wrong with those. But what happens in our relationships is sometimes we take those desires and we hold them a bit too tightly.
Yeah, we make them into goals.
Mm-hmm. And we have this distorted thinking that what's really a desire, all of a sudden, we twist it ever so slightly, and we believe we need it. We need it for our existence. We need it to be happy. And if we don't get it, if somebody doesn't help me, like my husband this weekend with the kids, then we, you know, cycle downward into this relationship. And it's like, I desire you to help me. Becomes, I need you to help me. I demand, and if you don't, I'm going to punish you in some way. I'm either going to withhold my time, my attention, or I'm going to attack you verbally, or I'm going to do something. So to reverse this, so we don't get caught in this downward cycle, we have to recognize when a desire in our heart has been twisted and distorted into something we believe we need. We got to recognize that. Then we have to grieve the loss, because there's some things we can't have. Single people, they desire to get married. Well, maybe that'll happen and maybe it won't. So what will their life look like if they never get married? And they might have to grieve that, even though maybe tomorrow God will bring someone into their life.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get to the point where you can then, once you grieve it, you can embrace what is. And that, at that point, we can then live with that tension, that ongoing tension, because we all have desires that may or maybe never happen. But we have to be able to learn to live with the tension that comes with having desires and dreams, owning them, but not demanding that God or others fulfill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of goes along with what you said about wrong thinking and a lack of self-awareness can plunge us into this downward cycle. So how do we reverse this tendency? You know, we've got to be paying attention to what we're telling ourselves, first of all, because that self-talk is so subtle.
Yeah, you have to identify.
Yeah.
Just ask yourself, what do you desire right now? What are your dreams? And I'm not saying get rid of your dreams or desires, because they're important to identify and own them. But then, you know, what are the options if they never happen? What will you do? What will your life look like? And are you willing to hold them lightly?
Yeah.
And that's the challenge of life, to hold these things lightly rather than tightly.
I think what you're saying, in effect, is that we have to move to a place of acceptance in our lives. Because if we don't, we're really fighting the wrong battle. You know, we're so busy either in the past or, you know, trying to orchestrate things, control things, work all this stuff out and ruminate about it, where some of those things just aren't ever going to change.
Acceptance is where you're headed, but sometimes it takes us a little longer to get to that.
Oh, absolutely. So that requires, I think, that we need to examine our hearts before God. And so in order to do that, what do we need to do? You listed some things in the book.
Yeah, we got to carve out that time to get still, to hear God's still, quiet voice. Spend time reading scripture to stay in the truth. So we're reminded daily of what is the truth, what is wisdom. And then we have to be open to listen to what God's telling us. And one of the prayers I usually pray is just search me, O God, because the Holy Spirit's really capable, the Spirit of truth, is to point out some things we need to look at. More than once, I've held on to little petty grudges or even a deep resentment, and God sort of pointed it out, not in a condemning way, because he doesn't condemn us, but it's in a way that, you know, this really isn't best for you. You need to let it go. It's weighing you down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of what this whole thing is about is noticing. And I'm big on teaching my clients, you know, this art of noticing, not only, you know, the heart noticing, but starting out with your physical bodies. Like when you're carrying all this emotional trash, like you're talking about, you start feeling that physically. Like you might feel tense muscles, you're clenching your jaw when you're storing up all this anger. You know, if anybody's ever been around angry people, you can just kind of feel that exuding from their countenance. And so I think paying attention to those things, the physiological things, you know, do I have a constant knot in my stomach? Am I getting migraines? Am I having anxiety? All these are symptoms of something is wrong with my soul that God is calling me to do business with. And so it's noticing that. And then it's noticing the music of our hearts. You know, what is God telling us that we need to do to unload some of this emotional trash?
Mm-hmm.
All of that's hugely important. And I think we're all so busy, you know, blowing through life at such a frenetic pace that, you know, these things become kind of low-grade normal for us. It's like walking around with a fever and not knowing you're sick because, you know, you're just so used to carrying all this stuff around that you don't realize what freedom looks like until you begin to engage in that process.
That's an excellent point. We do. It just becomes normal, even though it's not God's best.
Yeah. Do you think we should be pointing out others' emotional trash? Because most of the time, you know, all the nagging and fighting and all the stuff that, you know, we do about someone else's stuff, about how their stuff is affecting us, it doesn't really work. Can we do anything to help people get serious about dealing with their stuff? Or do we leave that to God?
Well, you know, Jesus tells us to deal with the speck in our own eye before, you know, the log in our own eye before we point out their speck. So I think when we routinely deal with our stuff, it brings a sense of humbleness. And we see the darkness in our hearts, and we're less apt to be judging of others. But the truth be told, there are some people who are just pouring out their toxicity on us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we at this point, we just really have to create boundaries. We have to speak the truth in love. We can't allow people to continue to do that. So there's a fine line between maybe our friend hurting us. But if you have an open relationship, you can have, you know, it's very helpful sometimes to say what you said just hurt me, because they might have no awareness. And they're the type of person that does want to grow and does care about you. And it helps them be more aware. So that's the answer to that question is pray about it.
Yeah.
Because each situation, it depends.
Yeah, and so many Christians are, you know, stuck in this whole, I have to be a good Christian, I have to take this, I have to, you know, that's a whole other point of abuse. And
yeah.
Definitely that's not, you know, God's best.
Right.
And then I think a lot of times we justify our own behavior. If we're mean or nasty to somebody, we say, oh, well, that person deserved it. You know, they had it coming to them. And
yeah.
We really need to, like you said, look in our own eye, take the plank out of our own eye.
Yeah, and are we judging? Are we judging ourselves or are we judging others? Like you said, well, he had it coming. Therefore, that means we justify not dealing with the unforgiveness in our own heart.
Okay, so most of us agree that physical and verbal aggression are harmful, but what are some other destructive ways of expressing anger, and how can we express it constructively? We're going to get angry.
Oh, absolutely. It's a valid feeling. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with anger. The issue is how
what
are
do
you
we do
expressing
with it?
It?
Mm-hmm.
And so destructive ways, like you said, are physical, verbal aggression, but you mentioned earlier, sarcasm. You know, you sort of throw out that zinger, and then you make a comment like, hey, I was only kidding,
mm-hmm.
but really, you got to look at that as a face of anger. Or here's the way some people don't see themselves as being angry. They won't say anything. They'll just won't say anything. They'll give people the silent treatment. They just won't communicate for days or weeks. But they're not angry. But they got to, you know, look at that. That's destructive. That's a destructive form of anger. And then the other way is we withhold something. We withhold our time, our affection, our attention. We withhold the very thing we know somebody wants. And that's a destructive way of expressing our anger. So we got to think of how can we take this anger, which is an energy, and channel it in the right direction at the right time.
Mm-hmm. You write that it's important to understand forgiveness as both a choice and a process. What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, forgiveness isn't a feeling. It is a choice. You most likely, in many cases, will not feel like forgiving. So you have to make the decision, make the choice. But even when you do that, you decide, I am going to forgive. I've been called to forgive. Even when you do that, you still haven't done the emotional work of dealing with those feelings of hurt, and sadness, and betrayal, and anger. So if you only stop right there and make the choice, then you've forgiven someone on an intellectual level, but you haven't healed on a deeper level. So the fact that it's a choice and a process, the process is verbalize what happened to you and how do you feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow yourself to sit there and nurse the grudges. Yes, recognize them, verbalize them, but then remember what God's done for you. And remember, getting back to what I mentioned earlier, it takes time to deal with the pain. We can only handle it a little bit at a time. So depending on what the hurt is, the betrayal, it can take years. I mean, that sounds really, but it because there's a lot of little forgivenesses along the way.
And identifying the losses that are attached to the unforgiveness.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's so much loss that goes with, you know, some of these things, too. And then, you know, putting words to your pain, that's the first step, probably. You know, identifying the losses. Because
yeah.
In my book, I talk a lot about abstract losses. I mean, the big losses, the relational losses like divorce or death, they're pretty easy to see. But the more abstract losses like the betrayals, the loss of trust, the loss of a dream, an unmet
yeah.
expectation, you know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes those things are more subtle and so we don't think about that. I can remember talking to a client one day and saying, oh my gosh, that must have been a loss for you. And she just stopped for a minute and she's like, you know what? You're right. I never thought about that. It was a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think identifying it and then, like you said, putting words to that pain are the first steps to resolving some of that. What would you say to someone who's ready to face their bottled up feelings or their emotional trash, but who's overwhelmed by the task?
Well, I would say many of us get stuck at one point or another. And so that, first of all, I'd say that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing unusual. And then I like to share this story. Years ago, I still have the garage. 2-car garage, but years ago I could only get 1 car in it because ever since my divorce, all the stuff accumulated and I didn't at first have the strength and then I didn't take the time. And then eventually it got to the point it was just too overwhelming. And so this one particular summer I made the choice I was going to clean it out, But every time I went down to my garage, I just shut down. I just became paralyzed. I couldn't do anything. And that's what happens to people a lot of times when they haven't dealt with their emotions. Just all of a sudden, they look at them and there's just so much that they just shut down. Well, one of my friends said, you know, deal with a shelf. Another one said, deal with a box. But I had to break it down to deal with one thing at a time, one item.
Mm-hmm.
Pick it up. Was it going to keep it, throw it away, or give it away? And it was a slow process. It took me 3 months. But at the end, I talk about feeling free. Mm-hmm. I mean, my garage still looks like it did after I cleaned it up a couple years ago. But I knew what I had. I got rid of all the stuff that was weighing me down. And it was just amazing. So I would say to people like that, just focus on one issue, one event, one whatever, and just ask yourself, what's the next step? And don't be afraid to seek professional help. Sometimes these things are too much for us to do it alone. Or at the very least, we need a good friend to support us along the way.
Yeah. I think we have beliefs around this whole idea of if I go to that place of emotional pain, I'm going to just be overwhelmed and crushed by it. But the truth is that God knows how to gently get this out, like you said, little by little, and we won't die or be overwhelmed by it. So we have to remember that. We have to just, you know, you don't eat an elephant all at once. You eat them a bite at a time.
And the pain's so painful, it is so intense, that we think it's going to destroy us when, in fact, it will transform us if we go through that pain.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we don't realize how resilient we really are as people. I mean, look what you went through and look where you are now. I mean, I'm not saying you didn't go through a living hell or that it wasn't. Yes, it is. But we have strengths, and especially if we're Christians, we have the strength of the Lord, and we're so much more resilient than we give ourselves credit for.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would have never chosen it, but it made me so much better of a person.
Yeah, I mean, it changed the entire course of your life.
And
look at the work you're doing and the lives you're touching. Georgia, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to share all this with us. God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're just doing some amazing work, necessary work. Thank you again, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Okay, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.